Just so you know where I'm from a little village called Maesacummer, and this is the chapel I serve there. That's not a normal Sunday congregation, if only, though we had a sort of similar congregation to that yesterday as the church inducted its next pastor. Right, this is the work of MERF. It's a gospel-centered evangelistic fellowship of indigenous churches and workers. In other words, MERF sends out no missionaries. We only work with the indigenous church in Muslim countries, and that stretches now from Morocco in northwest Africa through to Somalia. Well, there's no workers in Somalia, we've got workers who go into Somalia, but right across North Africa then and down into East Africa, into the Middle East, Pakistan and Indonesia. So it's quite an extensive work now, but we work with the indigenous churches in those lands. In evangelism, that's where the bulk of our work goes on, through terrestrial broadcasting, but now very much more work being done through the internet, radio stations, that kind of situation. Church extension, that is planting new works in various places, helping the church do that. Biblical training is a big factor in the work of MERF, because, I'll just come over this side, because the need for the training of pastors in some countries is quite immense. There's 8 teaching centres, 2 of them are in Africa, in Lokichokio and in Addis Ababa. If I could just sort of illustrate the importance of Bible training, I've taught pastors in Lokichokio who have congregations of 5,000 up to 8,000 people. One man had a congregation of 8,000 people. Until he came to Lokichokio, he had never read the Old Testament scriptures because they weren't available in his language. So they begin at Lokichokio with a month's intensive English training to increase their skills, and they're given an English study Bible, and for some men that's the first time they've read the Old Testament. Now you think about the ethical structure of your life as a Christian. It's reinforced by the New Testament, but the roots, the foundation, is Old Testament. They don't have that. And they're living in a predominantly Muslim, Islamic culture. That culture infects the life of the church, because people are living in that atmosphere all the time. So I've taught pastors in Lokichokio who have 3 wives, because that's the culture they've been living in. And to take them then through those early chapters of Genesis, all those foundational truths, that's like a new world for these men. And if you are then able to teach men who have that kind of influence, those numbers in the church, you can see that although you're just teaching one little man in North Kenya, when he goes back into South Sudan, he can be impacting many thousands of people and begin to change the culture of the church, so that it's far more biblical. In other words, a work of reformation taking place. So the work of Bible training is really important. And then diaconal aid just depends on where you're sending that, as to what form that takes. There's a short video here that introduces the work.
Middle East Reformed Fellowship is an indigenous Christian missions organisation active in Arab and Muslim lands. The ministries are bearing fruit throughout the 22 nations of the Arab League and other Muslim lands. MIRF's unique approach is to strengthen local churches and enable them to carry out ministries in four areas: evangelism, church extension, biblical training, and diaconal aid.
Evangelism. MIRF reaches Muslim believers using the media of radio, internet, and literature in 13 different languages. Through SMS text messaging, social media, and email, local staff and trained volunteers connect with the growing number of Muslims who express serious interest in the liberating truth of the gospel.
Church extension. By assisting national churches that already exist, Christ's kingdom is expanding among Muslim peoples in different countries. New converts are being discipled and join local churches, as well as becoming part of new congregations. Biblical training. Biblical training is the backbone of MIRF's ministry. Indigenous workers know the languages and the cultures and require no visas or work permits. By equipping and assisting them, they carry out faithful, fruitful, and cost-effective gospel work. Diaconal aid. There is much suffering in Arab and Muslim lands. MIRF carries out works of mercy among the needy in the context of its ministries of the word.
What the Lord has raised through MIRF is effective, faithful, fruitful, and cost-effective missions in our modern age through indigenous means. Indigenous people do not need to learn a language. They do not need to adjust to the culture. They do not need a work permit or a visa. But with appropriate and relevant training, we can partner with them to do faithful work, faithful gospel work. And that's what's happening. The Lord, in His goodness, has blessed MIRF over these years. And now we have teams of wonderful indigenous people, gifted, equipped to do the work of the gospel among their own people.
Your gracious support enables MIRF to continue faithful and effective evangelistic efforts, growing the church in Arab and Muslim lands. It provides training and support for national workers and meets the diaconal needs of the suffering.
So, you saw on the film there the John Calvin Center in Cyprus, which is home to an international church and a research library, a training center, and also broadcasting facilities there in Cyprus. You heard, I think the narrator said 13 languages, the video said 14 languages, and not here it says 15. That's because they're constantly expanding that ministry, and they've just started a new Tamazight language broadcast from Morocco for the Berbers in Algeria particularly, because of a great move of God that's been going on there. They need our support. Translation and publishing, lots of Banner of Truth books, Evangelical Press, Brinterian Press, that's the Evangelical of Wales publishing house. Lots of their publications have been translated into Arabic and Farsi particularly. The biblical training I mentioned and diaconal aid. Large sum of money went into Lebanon following the port explosion, and South Sudan, the problem would be starvation through famine and warfare. Pakistan, well, all sorts of problems in Pakistan. Indonesia would be, we rarely hear of the number of volcanoes, tsunamis, earthquakes. They just have natural disasters so often that we don't even hear about them on the news unless they are mega. But a lot of aid goes to Indonesia for those situations. And the aid goes in to the churches, for the churches and for those beyond the church, for the local church to administer. So we're not a humanitarian aid agency. We don't get involved in that. It's just supporting the local churches to do what they can in those situations. We play that down simply because the Lord's people are so generous and kind that they hear of something on the news and all this money starts coming in. We never ask for it. It just starts coming in. And it becomes a bit of a headache, to be honest with you. So we just try to ship it out as fast as we can to the local churches on the ground. Anyway, Middle East, what do you think of it? Nothing but trouble. But no, that's not the whole story. We've heard for decades now all the bad news. I want to bring you some good news of recent developments in the past 20 years across the Middle East. It's the most rapid growth of the church in history in the Middle East, following the advent of Islam, we should say. Between 2016 and 2020, more than 100 new church buildings were constructed in the Upper Nile region of Egypt to accommodate converts. So many people have been converted in Egypt that they've had to build 100 buildings. The government, there's been a change of attitude since the death of, who was there? Mubarak was in power, wasn't he? But since the overthrow of his regime, there's been a complete change of attitude in the government. They want to be more sort of Western and encourage more income from the West. And so as a result, they've granted greater liberties and protection for the church. So they have been giving land for churches to be built. The church has to pay. And then they undertake to protect those buildings. And if those buildings are destroyed in riots, well, years ago, tough luck, they would say. Nowadays, if they're destroyed or damaged in some riot, uprising, the government pays for the rebuilding of a church building. That's quite a change. Mm-hmm. Lebanon, 6 new churches recently have been built and others have been enlarged to accommodate converts. And 2 of those churches, one is made up of Druze and the other is made up of Kurds. So refugees in Lebanon have been coming to faith in Christ. Saudi Arabia has been astonishing. In the past 7 years, more than 100 congregations have formed. Prior to that, there were no Saudi congregations. It is a capital offence to convert from Islam in Saudi Arabia. And so for many years, Merv has had contact with individual Saudi Christians. But in the past 6 or 7 years, 100 congregations have formed. Because so many have been converted, they've been able to form churches. They meet secretly, but that's what's been taking place. Algeria, between 2007 and 2015, the church grew by 4,000%. So imagine when you're old here and no one's ill, and think in 8 years' time, 40 times as many people. That was the impact of the work of God in Algeria during that period. And this is why, or partly one of the reasons why this new website has been set up, this broadcasting website, to help Algerian Christians. It's not possible now to find a Berber town or village in Algeria that hasn't got a gospel church in it. It's been a tremendous change. But, as I mentioned down here, 2019, the government closed down 1,000 church buildings in Algeria, trying to repress the growth of the church there. Iran is the fastest growing church in the world, apparently. Syria, churches have been re-established and numerous new churches planted in former ISIS territory. So if you remember the war that's been going on there and how ISIS controlled the north, in, for example, Aleppo, when ISIS took Aleppo, they gave the Christians 3 days to leave. 138,000 Christians used to live in Aleppo. Virtually all of them went in a space of 3 days. ISIS was defeated, go to Aleppo now, there are new churches, not with returning Christians, converted Muslims. And the Reuters news agency, 2 years ago, in April, had a report from Aleppo. One of their reporters went in and he reported how many churches there were in Aleppo. How shocked he was to find these churches opening. One church had 180 families meeting for worship, and he mentioned that all the men had abandoned the name Mohammed and had taken Christian names. So there's been a tremendous change taking place in Syria. The south of Syria, the churches are bursting at the seams with Christians who left the north. So the scene there is very different. And it's really interesting to talk to Christians in the Middle East, their attitude to Western influence in the Middle East. And what they always say is, if you've got any influence or power, if you've got any influence with an MP, please ask them not to intervene in the Middle East, because the Christians cop it big time. So they were very supportive of Assad, very supportive of Hussein, very supportive of Gaddafi, not because they were dictators, but because as dictators they imposed peace in the country and the Christians could live their lives. Once they were gone, the militias came up, started fighting, and the Christians get crushed in that warfare. So it's very interesting to hear their perspective on it. Sudan, the Sudanese government in Khartoum, now actually funds Christian broadcasting. They pay for 2 hours Christian television and radio broadcasts every day. And Christian pastors are invited to go into schools where the whole school is Muslim and to teach the Christian faith in a Muslim school. That doesn't even happen here, does it? So big changes. Question is why? I'm keeping this short because I'm conscious we attacked this right on the end of the meeting. Whenever God works in history, he usually works by big movements of political importance, etc., etc., social change, etc., and you find that something happens in the tail end. Well, God's in charge of those kingdoms as well, and the political movements. So what's been going on before all these sudden conversions in the last few years? Islamic extremism has been the number one thing. As you talk to Muslim converts, that's something that comes up over and over again. None of us coming in here this morning thought, what if ISIS attacks us? Not one of you thought that, did you? And I don't think there'll be a church, or hardly a church, it would be in some places, there'd be hardly a church in our country today who meant thinking an Islamic extremist might come in and kill us. They have to think like that in the Middle East. And do you know who gets it the most? Not the church, Muslims. ISIS killed far more Muslims than Christians. And the extremism of ISIS, Al-Qaeda and such groups has made many Muslims stop and think, if that is where the extremes of our religion take us, what sort of religion is this? And so half the Muslim world is under the age of 30. They've got mobile phones, they're being influenced now by Western secularism, and so most young Muslims don't share the Islamic faith. It's just a purely, nominal thing, conventional thing that they say they're Muslims and go through the motions of prayer, etc. But there's no reality in their faith. It's only because in some places, like coming to this country, and they end up crammed into a tight little group, and it's the thing that defines their group, and they're open to radicalization because of that. It's not like that in the Middle East or in many other Islamic countries. So, Islamic extremism. Second thing, the life of Mohammed. Most Muslims only knew a few of the legends. Now, the life of Mohammed is widely available on the internet, and as a result, Muslims are reading it, and they're asking the question, why do we listen to a man like this? Why would we think a man who lived like this is a man of God? Someone through whom the word of God would come, because he lived an appalling life. So that becomes something that shakes their adherence to the faith. And the third big impact has been social media. The fact now that a Christian in Saudi Arabia this morning can be reading the Bible on his phone, and if the police come, he can, with one click, it's gone. There's no evidence against him. But he can access a world of Christian theology through his telephone. And that's so now for millions of Muslims in the Middle East. And these three things have been the most significant movements culturally and socially that have led to many people examining the life of Jesus Christ, reading the scriptures, and coming to faith.